Welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray. I'm a coach and I primarily support working parents and carers who believe that parenthood shouldn't be a barrier to a successful and fulfilling career. In this podcast series, I chat to inspirational working parents and ask them to share their own experiences of raising children alongside their careers. We talk about the struggles and the moments of joy. And I hope in each episode, there's something that can bring you a bit more strength and positivity. So please follow, listen and subscribe on all major platforms. Hello everybody and welcome to this episode of The Parent Equation. The Parent Equation was originally started as a platform for working parents to share their experiences and personal stories. But I really wanted to acknowledge that the journey to parenthood can be a real struggle for many people, myself included. So today I'm joined by Hannah Norris. Hannah is the founder of a boutique PR agency who looks after food and restaurant clients. And Hannah's journey to parenthood is still ongoing and has been somewhat of a struggle. So Hannah has been very brave in coming out with her story to hopefully help other people in the same situation. And she's going to talk to us today. So welcome, Hannah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being on. I really, really appreciate it. And I think your story is going to resonate with so many people. So just maybe briefly, as an intro, just give us a quick background as to who you are and why you started on this journey. And then we'll go into it a bit more deeply.
So yeah, my name's Hannah. I am about 45, about. I run my own PR business. I have done for the last 10 years. And it really has, if I'm being really honest with you, has been kind of my baby. I mean, I'm very proud of it. I'm very protective of it. I work hard. This year has been very challenging. Restaurants have been really hit. So I've had to kind of double the hustle, but it's paying off and I've got some nice clients and in many ways, it's been a constant source of consistency, and I rely on my business and it's been my port in a storm. So concurrently, I have also been trying for a baby. I live on my own. I'm single and I've been trying for a baby with a really great friend of mine, and he is desperate to be a dad. So it's all kind of worked out quite well in that respect. I have personally been trying for about 6 years and with him about 5.5. And it's just not worked. I've been pregnant and miscarried. I have had many just horrible negative pregnancy tests, many more than I'd like to share. So I think it's been a real juggle. I've juggled the business and sort of put my best game face on a lot of the time, and I've also had many days where I felt like I wasn't really able to get out of bed. I mean, thankfully I'm lucky. They've been few and far between. I've got wonderful kind of parents and wonderful friends. And I have psychotherapy as well, which helps. I pay for that as well, because I know the value of it. So I'm able to kind of find my little voice throughout it all. But I'm not going to lie, it's hard. And it's true. When I was thinking about coming on this program, you know, people talk about juggling parenthood with business.
Yeah.
But actually juggling IVF with business is definitely challenging. And you've just kind of always got to get up and always got to face the music with the business. It's not like you can really have a couple, you can't just take a few weeks off. I mean, I know people in the IVF world who they will have a negative pregnancy test and they just don't go to work for 3 months. Their husband kind of pays the bills, and
as in a sort of period of grieving almost.
Like, exactly. And reflection. And whilst I think actually much to my detriment, I think I probably did need some periods of doing that in many ways. I didn't. A lot of people have just said, go to a beach for 2 weeks. And I often just didn't do that. So there are things I would have done differently for sure, because I think I'd have been able to come back and bounce back into the world a bit better. With IVF, when you first start it, you are told about something called the ribbon of emotion, and it really, really is a thing. You can be seemingly okay. You can do a meeting, and you can I'm fine, and then a couple of weeks later something can happen and it kind of triggers you and sends you over the edge. It's amazing. And these blooming things, these phones, have a habit, particularly on Instagram, of reminding you where you were 3 years ago. Where were you on this date in 2016? And I hand on heart, I do not know how I've done it, I'm reminded of dinners that I did or press events that I was hosting. For example, at the beginning of 2018, where I was waiting nervously for the results of a load of genetic testing I was having done on my embryos. But I was just being a blooming, but it's amazing how it reminds you. And I was not aware at the time of how much I was juggling.
You don't always want to be or need to be reminded of these things.
Actually, it's quite good for me to be reminded of it. Okay. Because actually what I'm very bad at is kind of going, yes, it is quite hard. It has been very hard. I'm like, well, I tend to go, well, it's what it's happening. And I do tell nearest and dearest, you know, the really intimate stuff. But honestly, I'm very bad at knowing in that moment how stressed or how upset or how much something has affected me. So it's quite good for me to realise, get these reminders so that I can start to be more aware of, is it right that you're doing a press event tonight, Hannah? Or do you need to just say, actually, I'm not able to do that, and say no to that piece of business? That's, you know, we're not really programmed to say no to things. I am like the biggest yes person in the world. And I think everything's going to work. And I think everything's great. And I'd never want to make anybody feel like something was not going to go well or wasn't going. And that's part of the thing with IVF. You always think it's going to work and it just hasn't for me.
And you run your own business. So you have to say yes.
And I run my own business. And I've stayed a yes person. I've stayed very much, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. Actually, it's been really interesting. The last maybe 6 months I found this year interminable. We'll come on to talk about that. But 2020 has been so awful on the IVF front. I mean, basically nothing has happened because I can't get on a plane.
Okay, so Hannah, can you take us maybe 6 years back in this journey? You've mentioned planes in 2020, obviously, just now, but let's go back a little bit just to give some context to your story.
Yeah, I was sort of nearing my end of my 30s and suddenly woke up and felt a really big urge to become a mother. I mean, my sister had already tried to have babies and she'd had a very, very awful miscarriage. So it was kind of on all of our agendas. She was married in 2013. So we were just all sort of thinking about babies. So if we look back to sort of I turned 40 in 2015. That's a real milestone date for me because I did really decide to get cracking around then.
Yeah.
Which obviously was quite late. I didn't feel like it was late. I felt young and periods were normal and I felt fertile and I'd had a couple of tests done that proved that I had good egg reserve left. So I wasn't worried. And then I started with, I actually did some anonymous Danish sperm to begin with, which didn't work. And then
why Danish particularly? Was that just happened to be Danish?
I'd read loads of articles about it. It was easy to get hold of. Right. I would sit looking at British sperm banks and they were sort of all in IT and I felt a bit miserable. It's not a particularly cool industry in the UK. Egg donation and sperm donation is just, it's not particularly sexy.
Yeah.
It's not paid very well. It doesn't really attract many people. We're all a bit British about that sort of thing. It's just not a particularly thrusting industry. Other countries seem to have it completely sort of licked. So I went to Denmark, got my sperm. I was quite positive about it all. It was quite fun. It didn't work. And during that time, I had met the guy that I am now trying with.
Yeah.
I met him at a party with his partner. And from the get-go, it was very positive and very sort of loving and very exciting. It was lovely to have somebody with me doing it with me.
Yeah.
So we go to all the appointments together. We had to do psychotherapy together. He did all his sort of donations. I came with him. So it was all sort of very, again, positive and fun. We had to try a few clinics. We were turned down from a couple of clinics. People thought what we were doing was a bit odd. So we got through the kind of stigma of that and found a clinic that did want us. And to be honest with you, it kind of all starts to go pretty well. I mean, I was making good embryos. First two rounds I didn't make any genetically viable embryos, so I didn't put any in. I took no risks, and on the third round, this is fast forwarded now 3 years, takes so long IVF, nobody tells you that,
costs a lot of money.
a really good batch of embryos that I had three that were genetically viable, so it was a great result for me. And out of those three, one I became pregnant with one of them, but sadly it miscarried. It just didn't develop properly. So I did try a fourth time early in 2019. It didn't work. And I made a decision quite, I'd already been thinking about it, but I made the then decision to then start looking at egg donation, so to stop using my own eggs.
But at, that point, had the doctors told you that your eggs were no longer viable, or was that a decision you just took?
It was becoming clearer in my conversations, and then after the fourth go, he said they're not working. I don't think they were ever viable.
Right.
If I'm being honest with you,
yeah.
Even the genetically viable ones, they miscarried or they didn't work. And what people don't tell you in IVF is that people talk a lot about sperm quality, but they don't tell you really it's the egg. It's all about the egg. The sperm, in the nicest possible way, the sperm is literally just there to fertilize it.
Right.
You can have none. You then have to swim. IVF is fabulous. ICSI is another form of IVF, which where you just literally stick the sperm into the egg. There are some incredible ways to think about it. Ultimately, it's the egg. The egg forms the fiber, the metal, the health of the baby, how strong it's going to be. We don't get to choose the eye color and the sex, all the fun stuff, but we do get to choose the health and the kind of longevity of the baby, the sort of how strong is this thing going to be. And sadly, if your eggs are not as good. So as soon as I started to look into egg donation, which I actually ended up going abroad for in America, the brilliant policy of offering you your money back if it didn't work, which I've never heard of in the UK. So they have a business incentive to make it work. It's quite a big business there. You know, I get offered a 24-year-old egg donor, and of course she produces so many eggs that were all my embryos fertilized.
Yeah.
And I now have three that are just absolutely AAA quality sitting in the freezer. I never had that kind of quality eggs. I kind of, you know, it was all sort of B, B, C, B, A. They were never AAA grade. And of course you realize that, you know, we're all supposed to be having children then, not now. So it's been a really kind of, and that's the biggest in terms of bringing it back to the business. For the last few years, I've already been feeling like I am probably getting a bit old to be doing what I'm doing. Luckily, it doesn't seem to be affecting me. I have business, but then when you look at that, and you look at baby making, and you think I'm just a bit old for everything, and that is starting to be a horrible feeling. I'm becoming so aware of my age. I'm becoming so aware of, like where I sit in society. You know, I am childless, I'm unmarried. I'm sort of getting to the stage where I need to think, is this going to be something I can do for the rest of my life, my business? And it's a very sort of sobering time. It's not massively fun. I feel quite unrepresented in life. I feel quite, I'm not quite sure where I fit in. So it's a really challenging time. And then you throw in the kind of the hideousness of lockdown and the kind of the amount of time we've had to sort of sit and think. And it's been quite grueling.
And also, 45 isn't an age. You're not old at 45. So what is it, think, that is making you? So what is making you feel? Is that in your head, or is it external influences, do you think?
I think it's a mixture of becoming infertile. I mean, I am 45, and I don't feel that's particularly old. But it is when you throw in being told that you're infertile. And then time just is like a vortex. It either goes really quickly or really, really slowly. So, for example, I can't tell you where the last 6 years have gone. They've gone in a flash. And yet this year, I mean, I know I'm not the only person, but I can't believe it's suddenly December. So it's gone so quickly in so many ways. But then in other ways, it's gone so slowly. We're all looking down the barrel of a gun at the beginning of April thinking, how the hell are we going to get through this?
That you have these three Grey Day embryos on ice, and where physically are they at the moment then?
They're in Washington, D.C., just outside Washington, D.C. They're in a clinic called Shady Grove. I like them. I went to see them. I like them. I knew people that went there and had everyone. Everyone I know who's gone there has become pregnant. But I particularly was, given I've spent so much money over the last few years, it was appealing to the idea that I could get my money back, and they were kind of, They're incentivized to make it work for me. I can get my money back if I just change my mind and decide not to do it anymore.
Right, okay. And forgive my ignorance, but do you have to have the procedure in Washington, or can the embryos come here and the procedure be done here?
If I have my embryo shipped from Washington, I lose all of the care of Washington, of Shady Grove.
Right, okay.
So they're there, and I have to go there in order to have the procedure and stay within the margins of the rules that are being, you know, the contract that we have signed together.
Yeah.
But getting to America is something I have not been able to do.
And obviously none of us know when that's going to open up, I guess. But when are you hoping that might happen? And I suppose, is there a deadline for you?
I have not set a deadline for this because it's too scary. I mean, I set a deadline years ago of when I was going to stop doing IVF, and we've gone past that date. There's kind of no point setting deadlines for me. They don't work. But I don't think I'm going to be able to go legally, as in the whole world can travel again for at least 6 months. I mean, I thought it might be September. We're now in December. I have got some routes to get there. I'm in talks with the US embassy about getting a special exemption. There are ways of going by the Caribbean for a couple of weeks and entering the US that way.
Yeah.
Because I will have been in a COVID free country for 2 weeks.
Right.
There are ways I'm looking at. Yeah. I've had a curveball hit me over the last couple of months. I'm all set to go. And I'm told that my blood pressure is too high and I need to try and bring that down. So that has come down, which is great. But it's just been yet another thing of bad luck in a long chain of things with bad luck.
Yeah, and it's no surprise your blood pressure's high given everything that's going on at the moment. So all being well, you could still be successful in this. It might be, as you said, middle of next year, but there's no reason why if all opens up, then it can still happen for you.
And as always with IVF, I remain hopeful and, you know, the hope is starting to be tinged with a bit of fear. The hope isn't what it used to be. It's not like a kind of youthful hope. It's just a please, 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 please let this happen kind of hope. So that's hard. And that's an emotional thing when you start to realize that you're kind of your get up and go and your positivity that kind of I have lashings of it. When that is starting to be kind of tainted with, really, babes, you sure? That's hard.
And positivity for anybody is a very hard thing to maintain when it feels like you're not making any progress or taking a step forward. So if you, I'm hoping that there are lots of, well, I'm not hoping there are lots of people in your situation, obviously, but I'm hoping that people listening to this who are in a situation will really be able to take something out of this conversation. So for them, and maybe people who are at the beginning of this journey, which you've obviously been on, as you said, for six years, what's your biggest pieces of advice or just things to watch out for, look out for if they're starting that journey? So they don't maybe set themselves up for success earlier.
So my biggest piece of advice are trusting your gut instincts. If something doesn't feel right, really stick to it. I think there's also a big part for middle-class elbows to come in. I don't know about anybody else, but I have huge white coat issues. If a doctor tells me something, I go, okay.
Yeah.
And I tend to just sort of nod and I kind of paralyze with fear. I don't really ask the questions. And it's only when I come to percolate, I think, well, why the hell didn't I ask that? Why didn't I say that? Why didn't I say that's absolute rubbish? That's not fair. The world of IVF is a cruel, cruel place. It's full of, particularly if you go down the private sector route like I have, it is full of people wanting to take your money, suggesting ridiculous operations and procedures that you don't need because they know that they're going to make money from it. And then interestingly, wriggling away from when you say things like, I'd like to test my embryos. They say, really? Why would you want to do that? And because they want you to put in embryo after embryo after embryo without them being genetically viable, that's what suits them down to the ground. So there are a lot of, I can't think of the word, but there are a lot of I don't think there are many good people in this game. I struggle to think back on many people, particularly in senior positions, that have made me feel good. The nurses have all been lovely as far as I'm concerned. They're the ones that kind of, they're at the coal face, and some of the guys that actually make the embryos are just so clever. But hand on heart, I find it very difficult for anybody to be accountable or answer questions or anything. In fact, I did take one of my clinics to the cleaners and I got some compensation out of them. When I had my miscarriage, they dealt with it so badly and they were so cruel. They said that I needed to lose weight. They said that was the reason that I'd miscarried and that was nothing to do with it. That was the only suggestion they had for me. It was the only kind of voice of solace. It was a horrible, horrible experience. So I would say, talk about how you're feeling. If something doesn't feel right, ask questions or move on to another clinic, get out of there. Really trust your gut instincts. And if something doesn't feel, something doesn't feel right, say something.
And did you find any solace or support in groups or other women or men going through a similar thing? Or did you find that was quite hard to come by?
No, I didn't. I don't massively find Facebook a particularly friendly place. There are a couple of IVF groups, particularly egg donor IVF groups. So I don't think they're particularly feels like some party I'm not invited to. They can make you feel lonelier. It's very strange. I have not been to any, I've not found any other kind of groups of people, but if I'm being honest with you, I have had a few people along the way in my journey, friends of friends of friends, who've been lovely and a real help, a real sounding board for me. Everybody knows somebody that's going through it.
Yeah.
So, and I've done a lot of it on my own. So it all depends on your setup. I mean, I went to the US Embassy back in May to see if I could try and speak to somebody. It was a stupid thing to do because of course they wouldn't let me anywhere near the place. But in the queue waiting to get in, I met a gay couple who were about to fly to Ohio to welcome the birth of their baby daughter through a surrogate.
Oh, really?
And their argument was that they were going to not cost the US taxpayer any money by taking the baby out of the country. And they had recruited a lawyer to come on board to help them fight their case and get the waiver. And actually, just in the frenzy of him saying, I heard you were doing fertility treatment. Can I help you? It was brilliant. He then thrust his lawyer's mobile number into my hand and said, call my guy. And I have done. And that guy is now going to help me for nothing.
Okay. Oh, great. That's brilliant.
So he's going to help me with that. So very serendipitous things have happened. I think.
Yeah.
I think putting yourself in certain positions, I think you can really open doors for yourself for sure.
And I think finding trusted advisors or trusted friends or people, like I said, who can give you genuine support.
That's the other thing. It's knowing who to trust. Doctors particularly. Mm. I have trusted everybody and learnt nothing. I've on hand on heart, I cannot tell you one person through my IVF journey in a clinic that I would be, even though I'm not carrying a baby, even though I'm not with child, that I just look back and I think they were so kind, and there's nobody that's kind. So they'll all open doors for you and say, hello, it's lovely to meet you, and shake your hand. And then they say, well, it'll be £325 for a phone call, please. So there's nobody kind, and there's no emotion in this business. It's like where the patient's emotion meets business. And it is a really cold world. So you've got to be a pretty kind of strong kind of person to go through it. I know a lot of people who have given up, which is very sad to hear.
Well, it is, and I haven't personally been through it, but I have known a lot of people who have and been party to the experiences they go through with the actual procedures and the waiting and the injections and the pills they're taking, and it's a 24/7 process for months and months and months, isn't it? It's not just an appointment every few months and then you get on with your rest of your life. It permeates through every day and everything you're doing. So it's you, as you say, you need that strong support network around you to get through it.
Very strong, or you need a network around you. And actually, my network has been my people, but my network has been my business. So, like, all my clients know what I'm doing. I've kept nothing secret. Even though it's probably been stupid to do that, there have been days when I've had to not come to them. I wasn't able to come to a meeting. I was having a meeting, had an appointment with the IVF, or I was having an embryo put in, or having my eggs taken out. And so I've had to kind of build that kind of time off in with my clients. So
that's important. Why would you hide it? You know,
lots of people do.
Yeah. And again, that again comes down to who your support network is.
And you add egg donor into the equation, and lots of people don't talk about that at all. It's a real taboo.
And did you find then with your Danish experience and the US experience, is that different to the UK? Then you talked about the UK being quite cold and quite businesslike.
No.
Is it different in Europe?
No.
No.
The Danish sperm was fine. I never spoke to one person. It was just all done on the internet.
Okay.
Shady Grove, sadly, I don't want to jinx it, but I'm just very underwhelmed. We're just underwhelmed all the time. They just don't check in, they don't phone, emails go unanswered. It's poor. And I have paid a lot of money to go to America. A lot. Yeah. I've had to remortgage my house to go. So at any point I could say, I'm changing my mind, I want my money back. But they don't seem to be doing anything it's like they're not aware of that. I'm not keeping them on their toes on any level. They're not on their toes.
And I wonder that obviously at the moment with the inability to travel there, I suppose for them, maybe they've kind of parked.
But I think everybody's using COVID as an excuse to be a bit crap.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
And not just with, not just with IVF.
And in my business, if I'm not doing the job or I've gone quiet on a client, I get told off for it. Well, it doesn't happen. I don't. It's not something that I allow to happen. So I am accountable for the money that people spend with me. There's no accountability in IVF whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Paying for something is the only thing I can think of in the whole world where you don't always get a result. It is a cruel place.
So why did you feel, I mean, obviously 6 years is a long time, why did you feel that now is the moment to share your story more widely? Because you've done sort of articles as well in the press, etc.
Yeah, I did an article in the Daily Mail. I don't know. The article in the Daily Mail was the main reason I did it. The only reason, really, was to try and find other women like myself. Mm-hmm. I would put sort of questions up on forums about it. Nobody would reply. There were some people maybe going to Poland or Greece, but nobody was going to America. And I know Shady Grove has UK patients. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find these women because I wanted to know if they have answers. I wanted to know if they also had some brilliant little nuggets of advice about how to get to America. Yep. Is there a way that I can play some kind of, like, you know, extreme health card? Is this emergency medical treatment that I could maybe kind of, I don't know, jiggery pokery with? Sadly, it didn't throw up one person. And there has been a wonderful article today in The Guardian all about how COVID is affecting people's fertility plans. Sadly, The Guardian piece is full of young 30-year-olds, so it doesn't feel like it's something that's relevant to me. But it's just as painful to read their stories. These poor women are, whether they're single, whether they're about to go for fertility treatment, whatever their situation is, COVID is putting such a problem.
Yeah.
It's putting such, even in my little tiny world, I was supposed to have a date back at the beginning of lockdown, and I didn't have it because of lockdown. And then lockdown was lifted, and I was then nervous, and then he was nervous. And we're going to try again this week to have a date. Mm. But I don't know if it's going to happen because we've got to sit outside. It's absolutely freezing. Do I have to wear a mask? I don't know. You know, I can't go on a date wearing a mask, can I? it's not very appealing. So the whole thing is just—it's very difficult for us single girls. Very difficult.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening to this, which I hope people are, and again, their story is similar, or they feel that they could also do with some support and someone to talk to, or someone like get some nuggets to share, then what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Just email me is probably best, or send me a message on Instagram. I mean, on Instagram, I'm at Hannah M for Mother Norris, or Mary. That's my middle name, not mother. or my email, which is just hannahnorris1975@gmail.com.
Okay, and I'll put all the links in, of course, to the podcast as well.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from anybody that is waiting to go to America in particular, because that is the place that's the hardest country in the world to get into on a good day, never mind during lockdown. So it would be great to know if anybody's got any clever ways.
And is this it for you then after the America trip? So let's hope it happens for you soon.
We're not going to try anymore after that. Yeah. And it's going to be heartbreaking if I decide to stop. Heartbreaking decision. That's when I'm going to need that beach.
And out of interest, why did you not look at the adoption? Well, maybe you did. Why did you not look at the adoption route?
I have, but many times. Mm. Again, I don't know if anybody listening has tried the adoption route in the UK. But if you go to your, bear in mind, I never went down the private adoption clinic route. Mm. I went to my local council, and I live in West London, and I went to three boroughs around me to go for seminars. You're not really supposed to go to your own one because you'd never adopt within your own borough,
right?
Because you would never want to bump into the child's mother in Sainsbury's.
Yeah, fair enough.
So they don't encourage that. So I went to a few borough meetings. Not only do the meetings that, I mean, they're lovely, they're very positive experiences, and you get to meet some of the social workers, but when it takes 8 months after you have been for your seminar to say thank you, it was lovely to meet you all, I'd love to know more. And it takes them 8 months to get back to you. My heart just sank. I thought this is going to be. And then you find out statistics about how many babies are adopted within a borough per year, and it's something like 3.
Right.
I want a baby. Likelihood of getting a baby very, very, very low. Mm. I do know friends that are going down the adoption route with private agencies, and that seems to be much, much quicker. But yet again, all of their stuff is on hold because of COVID and lack of house visits. So house visits have all been banned. Which just seems bonkers, because you could put a mask on and socially distance. Why should that preclude you from finding the right home for a baby who really needs it?
Yeah.
It's so sad. It's so sad.
And again, presumably the private route is, again, extremely expensive.
There's just no more money. There is no more money. There's no more money. I am well aware of adoption. I've been looking for years. Mm. They will not let me look at it until I have formally accepted my infertility.
Oh, really? Oh, right. So you can't actually do it currently. Right. Okay. Okay.
You have decided.
Yeah.
So, but by that point, if when I've formally accepted my infertility, I could be 47. Sorry, 46.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if it takes another 2 years to adopt a baby, I will literally be so old. I'm scared about that. I'm really scared about that. It's not a bridge I'm ready to cross yet.
So put all of our prayers and hope into America. And hope that at least early next year it might all open up for you.
I hope
again.
So.
Because it sounds positive if you can get there.
I think by hook or by crook I'm going to get there. I mean, if I have to get the boat, I'm going to try. So Barbados route is the most likely route at the moment. It's just now finding somebody in Barbados that can say, yes, you could definitely go into America from Barbados. That's the challenging thing.
Otherwise, you're stuck in Barbados.
Literally a nightmare. It sounds lovely, but I'll have to quarantine when I'm there.
Yeah.
I'll do injections and I have to have scans at very, very expensive private IVF clinics when I'm there.
Mm.
I'll be on my own.
Yeah.
So it does sound lovely, and I can't think of a better way to unwind before I go to America and have an embryo transferred. Yeah. But
it's not a beach holiday.
It's not. It's not going to be. No, it's going to be what you and I would consider a good 2 week break.
No.
But also, at any point, my body could be, my womb lining might not be thick enough. I might have to come home. I could catch COVID and have to come home. The risks associated with going to Barbados and all the variables are slightly blow my mind if I stop thinking about it too much. So, yeah.
So let's not think about that. Let's try and stay positive. Try and stay positive. Try and get to America. By hook or by crook, as you say. So Hannah, thank you so much for coming on. It's such a compelling story. I mean, it blows my mind really how much you've been through over the last 6 years, and how you're still going and you're still trying to be positive and, you know, just get it done. So I wish you all the luck and prayers in the world.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for coming on and sharing, and I hope that it resonates with people and they can take some support out of this conversation too.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Bye.
Bye.
It's quite hard for me to follow up on that conversation with Hannah. She was so brave and so open, and it's not something that I've been through personally before. But I will just reiterate that she really is looking for people who are in the same situation as her, especially those, I think, who are waiting to travel abroad, specifically America. So if you do want to reach out to Hannah, then you can directly, or by all means come through me. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next time.